It's good to see Jensen here holding his son for the first time. I forget the name, it's Malachi something. Malachi Jensen. It's good to see you guys. I love seeing little babies coming into the church, into the congregation, into our assembly. This morning, we'll be sharing from John chapter 18. Title of my message has a title and a subtitle. Title of my message this morning is The King of Kings is Framed, and the subtitle is The All-Sufficiency of Jesus for the Making of Saints. So this morning, I kind of have two tracks, and they're running parallel and simultaneously, but I'm going to cover the one track, then I'll come back and cover the other track. And at the outset here, I'll just say that there is nothing new under the sun. There is nothing new under the sun. I think you'll understand better as we go along. But follow with me as I read John chapter 18. I'll read through verse 27. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the Kidron Valley where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Judas, having procured a band of soldiers and some officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, went there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Then Jesus, knowing all that would happen to him, came forward and said to them, "Whom do you seek?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. When Jesus said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. So he asked them again, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you seek me, let these men go." This was to fulfill the word that he had spoken, "Of those whom you gave me, I have lost not one." Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me?" So the band of soldiers and their captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. First they led him to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it would be expedient that one man should die for the people. Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest, but Peter stood outside at the door. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the servant girl who kept watch at the door and brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, "You also are not one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was with them and standing and warming himself. The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus answered him, "I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple and where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard me what I said to them, and they know what I said." When he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered him, "If what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me?" Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself, so they said to him, "You also are not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter again denied it, and at once a rooster crowed. In this first the first track that I want to cover is, I just briefly want to go over how that Jesus was apprehended and quote-unquote framed by the chief priests and Judas. At the beginning of this chapter, verse 1, it says, "When Jesus had spoken these words." Now, if we go back over, well, the last four chapters, chapter 14, 15, 16, and 17, in the book of, in the way that the John wrote his gospel, all of that was discourse that had happened after the Last Supper, or during the Last Supper, or after the Last Supper. Jesus washed the John does not record the Last Supper in detail as the other gospels do, but he records him washing his disciples' feet, and it was obviously at that time that the Last Supper had happened, the Passover, celebrating of the Passover, and so on. But think in broad general terms, for what, 17 chapters through this gospel, way over 3/4 of this gospel, Jesus has been, he's been the mentor, he's been the teacher, he's been the mentor. He's had this band of disciples. We have Jesus' introduction, and we have his teaching ministry, his healing, his miracle ministry, his all of this that he did. And so he has assembled this band of disciples that he was teaching, showing. He was introducing them to this new revolution, this new kingdom. And so what we are experiencing here in this chapter here today is we're going from the classroom to the job site. We're going from theory and concept along with, some action, but it was watching Jesus do it. Sure, the disciples had been sent out two by two. They had been sent out a time or two to minister here and there. But it was under the specific direction of Jesus, and they knew that they would shortly convene with him again and, give an account and see how things went and so on. But what we are seeing here is the mentor, the Messiah, Jesus, he is getting ready to recede, to go away. And it doesn't go well for the disciples. So what we're seeing is we're going from concept and theory, from instruction to action. We're going from the classroom to the job site. We're going from the classroom to the practice. This is where it begins to happen. I think, for many of us, some of us more than others, we just like learning, and it's just so easy to just stay in the classroom, and it's just so easy to keep learning and learning. If we just know everything, if we just knew more, we could be more effective. If we just knew what we don't know, I'm sure there would be an answer that somehow we could do it. But there comes a time when it's time to move from that phase of our life to another phase of our life. That was certainly the case for Peter. And Jesus brought it about. All right, so From the beginning of the gospel, well, I already covered that. With the beginning of chapter 18, the founder and leader of the revolution, he knew that it was time for the next phase. Jesus knew that it was time for the next phase of his revolution. He must carry on his final mission of the revolution while leaving his disciples to carry it on into the future. Point number two is we see that Jesus is betrayed by one of his inner circle. I'm going to turn to Matthew chapter 26 real quick and read there, verse 14. Matthew 26 and verse 14. Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, "What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?" And they paid him 30 pieces of silver. Now, this, I'm not going to read the rest of it, but this happened right after Jesus was at the house of Simon the leper. Jesus was already making his way toward Jerusalem for the final Passover and his crucifixion. And he was dining at the house of Simon the leper. And while he was there, a woman came with some very, very expensive ointment and anointed Jesus' head. And yeah, just lavished on Jesus' head with that gift of precious ointment. And the disciples were like upset, and especially Judas. And it was like, just think of what all you could have done with all that money. And Jesus said, you know, it's okay. She's doing it for my burial. But that, it was right after that incident, and I don't know exactly what it was. Was Judas incensed that, you know, it's well known that he had he was the treasurer of the bunch, and he carried the money bag. And I don't know, and it's indicated one place in Scripture, I can't turn to it right now, that he sometimes used to help himself to it. So I don't know, was it that he was upset that Jesus blessed her for that display of lavish love on him, or exactly what it was? There was something about that incident, I think, that incensed Judas, because it was right after that that he went out and he said, okay, that's it. And he went and he connived and he conspired against his master, against his mentor, against Jesus, with the chief priests to commit him to them. Well, going back to chapter 18 and verse John, in John, actually, it was back in chapter 13. I'm not going to turn there, but actually, I guess I will. In chapter 13 of verses 21 to 30. I'm not going to take time to read it, but there in that passage, Jesus exposes Judas. And Jesus begins being sorrowful, and he says, you know, somebody, one of you is going to betray me. And a couple of the disciples, they motioned to each other, and the one was leaning against Jesus and motioned to him and said, you know, to ask him who it was going to be. And Jesus responded by saying, it's going to be the one to whom I give this piece of bread when I have dipped it. He dipped it, and he gave it to Judas. And he looked at Judas, and he said, what you're going to do, do it quickly. After a little bit, he goes, gets up and leaves. The other disciples didn't find out at all what had happened, really. They didn't understand what had taken place. They thought he went out to maybe go make some arrangements or something of that nature. But put yourself in Judas's shoes. Try to think, here you're thinking that you went and you got this deal, you made this arrangement, and nobody knows. And Jesus exposed him just like that. And it says, right at that instant, when Jesus handed him that bread and he took it, at that instant, Satan entered into his heart. And he went out and he sprang into action to bring about the collusion that he had made with the chief priests. Go quickly and do what you're going to do, Jesus said. And from the text, it was obvious that the other disciples didn't understand what had happened. They didn't know. And, you know, what we're seeing here, what we know of this account and everything that was going on, really, we need to grasp, we need to understand that we're getting the inside perspective. Think about how it would have been for you if you would have been back there and you would not have been a part of this inner circle. You would be one of the many, many, many people out there who get caught up in this or that, just like we have today. And, you know, something is going on. You know that there's this popular teacher who might be the Messiah. And there's people following him, and it's Passover, and this is happening. You hear say this, and you hear say that, and so on and so on. But you don't really know what's true, who to believe, what's going on for sure. What we're getting here is the inside story. We're getting, the details that we're getting are told by one who was on the inside. And so once I stopped and considered, you know, take for instance what we're experiencing in our country today. You know, why are there 20 to 30,000 troops at the Capitol just for an inauguration? I don't know. I'm an outsider. I don't know these things. Well, there's a lot of people that felt that way back then. What we're getting here in the account of Jesus being betrayed and given up and tried is the inside story. Judas went out. He assembled the group of chief priests, and probably it was a temple guard. Presumably, I don't know if there was Roman soldiers involved at this point yet or not. I don't know who Malchus was, but anyway, Judas knew where they would hang out, and went to the Garden of Gethsemane there, found them. We know how that Jesus was praying. He led his disciples there. They left a group of them here. Then he took a few with him a little further and told them to stay there and pray, and he went by himself a little further, prayed. Jesus came back, and his disciples were falling asleep. And finally, after a couple times, Jesus comes back, wakes them, and says, "All right, here they come. The time is now." Soldiers and Judas come up to him, and Judas points out Jesus to them, and they come up to him, and says, or he says, "Who are you looking for?" And Jesus says, they say, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said, "That's me." And it so took them back. It reminds me of when we had the Mormons at our place when Sam and Chris were trying to hear them out before they were married way back. They were had some Mormons at our house. They came back the second time. And I kind of tried to keep my distance and let them, you know, argue with them, discuss with them, etc. And when I overheard that kind of things weren't going anywhere anymore and so on, I kind of eased into the discussion. I heard them out a little bit. And they kept talking about the book of, about Joseph Smith, the Book of Mormon, and his writings, along with Jesus and the Bible. And when I saw that I wasn't going to get anywhere with them and was ready to bring this to a close, I just said, you know, I don't need Joseph Smith. Jesus Christ and his word is all I need. And she was like, taken back. You know, her jaw dropped and she was like, she didn't say it, but I could see what she was thinking. She probably felt like I blasphemed Joseph Smith. Well, that's a little bit the response that I take, that these soldiers experienced when Jesus said, "I am He." And in some regards, it's almost similar to his response. There is almost similar to where Jesus, the Pharisees had sent questioners to ask Jesus who he was. And he told them to go back and say, tell them, I am. And that would have a direct tie back to Abraham as well, when God had spoken to Abraham. All right. So anyway, they apprehended Jesus. They arrested him. And the second time when they asked him, when he asked them, who are you looking for? The second time, and they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And he said, that's me, take me, but leave these. So that it would be fulfilled that all of those who had been trusted to his care, except the son of perdition, except the one that betrayed him, that he wouldn't lose one of them. So anyway, they marched him off to Annas the high priest. Now, both Annas and Caiaphas are mentioned here. And from a text in Luke chapter 3, verse 2, it appears that Annas was Caiaphas. Caiaphas was the son-in-law of Annas. And it would appear that they took turns by years, maybe, being high priests, because they both served as high priests. It says that in Luke chapter 3, verse 2, where it's talking about angel coming and visiting Zechariah and Elizabeth, announcing the birth of their son, it says in the priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas. Now, in verse 19 here, beginning at verse 20 there actually, or 19, the high priest, it says, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. And Jesus responded with basically saying, you know, I haven't done anything in private. Everything I've done openly. Why don't you ask my, you know, the people that listen to me what I've done? What Annas questioned him about was about his disciples and his teaching. Now, Albert Barnes had this to say about that, and I'll just read a little bit here. It says, the high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples to ascertain their number and their power. the charge on which they wished to arraign him was that of sedition or of rebellion against Caesar. To make that plausible, it was necessary to show that he had made so many disciples as to form a strong and dangerous faction. But as they had no direct proof of that, the high priest insidiously and improperly attempted to draw the Savior into a confession. Of this, he was aware and referred him to the proper source of evidence, his open, undisguised conduct before the world. So you see what was happening? He was high priest was trying to get Jesus to make a confession. It happens today, you know, if the powers that be want to get a conviction somewhere because of making them look good or making this party look good or whatever, oftentimes one of the things that they'll try to do is to get them caught up in perjury, you know, by saying something, because if you even mistakenly lie to say FBI or some federal agents, you can become guilt, they can accuse you of perjury, even if you can't remember or you just mistakenly say, you all know how it works. And here he was trying to get Jesus to confess to this or this or this, and they wanted to convict him of sedition so that they would have a clear case against Jesus going to Caesar. But Jesus, he knew the game, he knew what was up, and saw right through their intent and put it back on them and said, just ask the people that observed me. To which one of the officers then smacked him across, I don't know, hit him somewhere, and out of, obviously, the officer's approach was, how dare you be so disrespectful to the high priest? But Jesus, in kind, responded just by saying, if what I've done is wrong, then show me. Because by Jesus speaking back up, he asserted his superiority over the high priest. Not in a violent or confrontive way, but in a true way. So then Annas sent Jesus to Caiaphas. So basically what we see here in this first track is that there's this track where the powers that were had decided Jesus needed to go. And they were looking for some way to catch him. They were looking for the appropriate frame up. And they had already made the decision that he needed to go. Caiaphas, the high priest, had said, it is expedient for one man to be expended on behest of the people. So they were going to figure out whatever means they needed to. They were going to frame him to get rid of him. And I think if, without too much imagination, we could probably say there's nothing new under the sun. Now let's look at track two. Track two, I'm going to go back to begin at Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22, verse 31 to 34. Peter the treasurer. All right? In verse 31, Jesus said to Peter, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail, and when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. Peter said to him, Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Jesus said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day until you deny three times that you know me. Now, in this passage, we see that Jesus says, Satan has demanded to have you that he may sift you like wheat. We see that, you know, but Jesus said, but I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have, listen to this, when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. In other words, Jesus already knew what would transpire in Peter's life. When you have turned again, strengthen my brothers. So we have Peter, having looked to Jesus as his master, his mentor, his friend, being arrested and taken to a corrupt judgment, Peter's first reaction was to strike with the sword, the arm of flesh. Peter, so confident, so sure, so ready to fight, suddenly can't believe what's happening. His world is falling apart. This can't be real. He knew the evil intent of Jesus' captors, and he did not trust them for 1 minute. Between trying to keep warm on a cold night and drifting in and out of a fog of fear, silent panic, and unfolding reality around him, he, just as predicted, 3 times denied even knowing Jesus. Immediately after the 3rd time, Jesus' loving eyes met Peter's, and instantly Peter painfully remembered. He went out and wept bitterly. You know, Jesus, try to put yourself in Peter's shoes. I think he had so looked forward. I think he had so relished the prospect of being a part of this revolution, having worked his way into the inner circle of this group of disciples, this group that was going to carry out this revolution that would bring freedom of the Jews from the Romans. And here everything was just really going wrong. And notice when it happened. It happened right at this time when Jesus was getting ready to go away. He wasn't the master anymore. Now he was subject. He was a prisoner. This isn't the way it was supposed to be. And Peter was all confused. We can identify with him. You know, Judas, we can contrast Judas and Peter a little bit. You know, Judas, they both denied Jesus, but Judas made a calculated decision to betray Jesus. Peter, on the other hand, first tried to be loyal to Jesus, but then when he was all confused and everything was a blur, and he couldn't believe what was happening. Yes, he denied Jesus. But really, in his heart, I think he was still loyal. After all, when it was reported that the tomb where he had been buried was empty, he was one of the first ones there. Probably would have been about the second, besides Mary, would have been the first one if he wouldn't have got outrun. So I don't think his loyalty was compromised. There was too many memories. Too much had been said. There was a seed of faith that remained in spite of having denied him. And maybe Peter remembered the words that Jesus had said, when you have turned again, strengthen my brethren. But Peter, in this time of his test, He was reprimanded for the use of force. He had let himself down by being fearful and denying Jesus. He didn't understand and nothing made sense, but he remembered God had a plan for him. The primary lesson that Peter learned through all this was that of his own strength and his own flesh, he was a miserable failure. And as I said, I think he had relished that way, the way of life as it was. He had been selected by the Messiah himself. He had worked his way into the inner circle, friends whom he was grooming to establish a new kingdom that would bring deliverance to the Jews. You know, it's so much easier to remain in that state where there's a strong leader, a strong personality, a strong, you know, the Messiah was there, the leader, the mentor. He was there, and you could just be a part of it, and you could go along and learn and be a part of that. That weaning process, if you want to call it that, not that we get weaned from the Word of God, but at that time when we have to step out and take action for ourselves, you know, put yourself in Peter's shoes. Sometimes we mess up. Sometimes we think we've lost it. But the difference is that Peter, in that waiting period until, you know, Pentecost, when the Holy Ghost fell and he was preaching and the people became saved and he became the leader of the church there in Jerusalem, until that time, he couldn't bring about his own career. He couldn't bring about his own role in the church. He just had to wait and be faithful until that time when God said, and that was a very defining and refining time, until that time when God said, poured out his Spirit on him, and blessed his work, his ministry. I'll quit with that.